Hi, I'm Anthony Moreno. Welcome to In Focus. In a recent report, the Southern Poverty Law Center says that in the 10 days following the presidential election, there have been nearly 900 incidents of reported harassment and also incidents of hate that have been reported to the Southern Poverty Law Center. In the report, they say that these incidents target women, minorities, and different religious groups. Today, our guest is Sarah Silva with CAFE. She is the executive director with CAFE. Thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Anthony.
Now, I'd like to hear a little bit about what your organization is doing in response to these reports of hateful incidents that people are saying that are happening in almost every state in the country. I know, for example, you have something on your website that's available.
Yeah, so in the days leading up to the election, New Mexico CAFE volunteers and staff, we turned out about 2,000 new people to vote in Doniana and Luna County. And through our civic engagement work, we heard people describe fear of joblessness, lack of health care, and concerns about education and mass incarceration. And then on election day and the days preceding after, folks were concerned not only for their future, but for their safety. And so we immediately put up something on our website where people can report incidents if something happened to them or their family that was due to race, class, or gender. But then we also, the Saturday after Election Day, about 70 people gathered to figure out, well, what do we do next, given our new administration that starts in January, and how do we protect the most marginalized and those that Trump, as the candidate, targeted specifically for marginalization or for going as far as even registering people?
Well, let's start off by talking about how immigrants have been targeted. I know your organization has worked with different immigrant communities. How does the rhetoric that was issued from the start of the president-elect's presidential campaign, how has that impacted the many communities you work with?
I think there's a lot of anecdotal stories about mixed race families that have to deal with how do we explain to our kids what they're hearing on the news or from family members. But also to be very clear that both parties over generations and numerous election cycles have used immigrants and targeted them in particular to move campaign agendas forward. And that's not okay on either side, on either party. And we know that Obama in his first election said that he was going to do something for immigration reform and nothing happened. And he has deported more people in his presidency than the last three presidents. But Trump, in contrast, has said that he will deport just as many immigrants that Obama did in his entire 8 years, which is about 3 million people, that he wants to do that in his first 100 days. So we want to take him at his word. There are people here that are DACA eligible, which means they're deferred action for childhood arrivals. So children that came here undocumented as children, as minors, now have legal status here. It's not permanent, but they can work and go to school. And we have about 40,000 of those in the state of New Mexico that are DACA eligible. And many of them are going to school here at MSU. They're working. And we got numerous calls, and we still do, saying, well, what do we do now? The government now has my name, my contact number, and how to find me. And we're trying to raise families and be good citizens here.
So could you kind of give us an idea of how the calls have been? Have you received more calls since the election or since the presidential campaigns have started?
I think there's two different kinds of calls that we get. One are just based in fear and not knowing what's going to happen. So there are people that may lose their health care, people that are really scared about losing their Medicare, and we don't know what's going to happen with those things. And then we have actual cases where people have been harassed at the supermarket because of their hijab, or their children being called names and racial slurs at school. My own daughter asked if her great-grandfather, my grandfather, would have to go back to Mexico after Trump was elected. And he's a legal resident here. So So we get a whole spectrum of people that are just scared, wanting to do something and wanting to be in community, but not knowing what to do.
You know, this report by the Southern Poverty Law Center states that out of these nearly 900 incidents that have been reported, 32% of them have been targeted towards immigrants or people suspecting somebody to be immigrants. Some of the people that have been targeted are American citizens who people just suspect that are immigrants.
Right. I think this this election and this candidacy has definitely called into question who we deem as American and not. And that's problematic because then we can say who deserves to have which rights and privileges and who is deemed illegal. And that term is getting more and more broad as we see President-elect Trump roll out his cabinet picks.
You mentioned taking President-elect Trump at his word. One of the things that Donald Trump has said during his campaign was the implementation of a so-called deportation force. Mm-hmm. How has that impacted the communities that you've worked with?
So there's already, I mean, we live along the border. There's already a deportation force. It's called CBP, Customs and Border Patrol. On day one, President-elect Trump has the power without congressional approval. He can order CBP to be to put up more checkpoints, to be to criminalize more communities, and to be more visible in our border communities like Vado, Mesquite, Chaparral, and we'll see raids like we did in 2006. We want to stop those things, and we want to do everything in our power to make sure those things don't happen, and we're calling on our legislators and other institutional leaders to call that out. But we're taking him at his word because he will have a lot of power with when it comes to DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, and CBP and ICE.
You know, you mentioned that you've got calls from people in the immigrant communities who want to get involved and know how or what they can do. When there is a large amount of fear and anxiety in communities like the immigrant community, how does that impact them from taking part in what local communities may do? For example, reporting things to the police.
Right. Well, we're asking people to go to their faith communities if they're part of a faith community. We're also, you know, we have colleagues and allies that are meeting with Gary Carruthers to ensure that that NMSU campus is a safe place and sanctuary, not only for immigrants, but for their Muslim students. And we want to ensure that our school districts are doing the same thing. And so out of our meeting the Saturday after Election Day, we had 70 people gather, and they all broke up into different teams. And they're all currently meeting with LCPD, sheriffs, school districts, including NMSU as well, and our mayors, our local mayors and legislators. So, and we want to say that New Mexico is going to feel the Trump agenda and his administration more swiftly and more acutely than any other state in this country. Our families rely heavily on government assistance. That includes Medicare, Medicaid, VA benefits, SNAP, which are food stamps. We rely heavily on them, but also as a state, we rely heavily on the federal government. For every dollar we send to DC, we get $2.30 back. And that's Bureau of Land Management, that's our military, and those are our laboratories, amongst other things. So, and then he's talking about building a wall where there's already one here. So all of those things, cumulative, and the compound effects of those policies, New Mexico is gonna feel it the quickest and the harshest.
You know, we just have about a minute left, but I wanna let you know, I'm curious. You mentioned earlier the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival program and the people in that program that you're working with. What's the anxiety like with those perhaps students or people that are in that program?
We have students that are on track to become nurses here, and they want to stay here in New Mexico. And they're saying, am I going to have to quit my studies because they don't have access now to financial aid? Whereas now they do. And they're saying, worst case scenario, I'm out of work and I'm out of school. Or that's the best case scenario. Worst case scenario, CBP comes knocking at my door and I'm out of here. And there's some children that have been here since they were three. They don't know any other country besides this one. So there's a big fear there.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us. We'll continue this conversation. Yeah. And we want to thank you for joining us for In Focus. I'm Anthony Moreno.